Listen, trust me, it's much better to be lucky than good. And
I'm not claiming that you're good. I'm just claiming you're lucky. I'm not claiming you're good.
I agree. But services is the big gorilla in the room as far as our economic strength is concerned.
The equity market seems to be almost like a rebellious teenager. It doesn't really know what it wants to do.
When the bears get under 20%, that's frothy. If the bears go into hibernation, that's a problem because there's no one left to sell. That can go on for a while. Don't get me wrong. It can go on for a while, but it can create a big, fat garage door spring that whips you right back into place in a real hurry, right? And I got to tell you, I mean, it was masterful. Now, don't get me wrong, they should have cut in July like we said. Everything would be fine, right?
They obviously don't listen to the intelligent investment presented by ARPG.
Now, don't get me wrong.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show. I'm starting to learn. I think everybody starts to have you start to notice your own little nuances. I think mine is I've got a natural Matthew McConaughey that comes out. I start every single podcast with, "All right, welcome back." And it's like, "All right, all right, all right." So I think I'll start all these things. So welcome back, Matt Dahl of ARPG. Pleasure to see you as always, my friend.
2 weeks went by fast.
It always does, man. I feel like it takes me a day or two to edit, so I hear your voice almost nonstop. You are the voice in my head. As I was reading your newsletter this morning, it's like, that's the voice in my head. I don't know if that's good or bad, but
this one was a little special. I think all of us here in the office, you included, as part of our little team here, we're all kind of Blink 182 fans. So we wanted to give this one a little extra energy, make sure it was a little bit better. So we use all the songs. We use a lot of songs, but this one I really wanted to dive into the song "I Miss You" a little bit, right? And just rather than just use normally when I do those newsletters, I'll use a song. I'll reference songs here and there, right? This one I reference songs and actually passages from that song "I Miss You" because we're getting to Halloween. I think it's a really cool song too.
There were so many. So for the listeners who might be a little bit in the dark, Matt has a quarterly newsletter, I believe, that goes out, Intelligent Investment newsletter, and sent it to me this morning to review. And you said take a look at it for the show. And it was so cool. I knew what you were doing with the Blink 182 thing, but then I saw the footnote and I was like, wonder what the footnote is. So I scroll down to the bottom and I look at the footnotes, and it was the coolest thing in the world. It was footnote reference one, Blink 182. And then 2, 3, 4, and 5 were CNBC, Bloomberg. Right. it was the absolute, I think that would be a really cool social media post if for nothing else. It's these are the references in order of priority of how we conduct our business around here. Number one source of information, Blink 182. And then we supplement that with things like CNBC, Forbes, and Wall Street Journal and things like that. But Mark, Tom, and Travis.
Mark, Tom, and Travis their credit. Guys are back together. I don't care what anyone says. When those three guys are together, they're good.
The newsletter that you sent, it was nostalgic in a way because I'm going through it. I'm like, I have heard all of these songs, and when I would read the quotation, I could hear the song in my head, but I'm having to go back through them. Those guys have been around for 25 years and, putting together music for a good part of that, minus, their break there. And there's a lot of songs in there that I know the songs. I can't quite tie it to the album or remember the first time I heard it or even really remember what the song's about, but I can hear the song in my head. I think this is going to be an interesting weekend coming up where I have a feeling I'll be listening to a lot of Blink 182 for some random reason for the next few days.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to binge one Blink 182.
That's right.
We'll call it binge 182.
Binge 182. There you go. I love that. If you're new listening to the show, welcome. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you find this some combination or blend of entertaining and educating. I don't know if we're 80%. We're 80-20 education and entertainment. I don't know which is the 80, though. I think that's maybe the way I would summarize it.
It depends on the week. I mean, I feel like it this week, we might be closer to 50-50.
Okay.
Especially if you're talking about Blink 182.
Yeah, absolutely. So we chatted a little bit yesterday. Lots going on. We got earnings season coming up. We've got a little bit of a, I don't know, was it a surprise? Was the interest rate movement, what's happened there in the Fed and jobs report, was this a surprise or is this just kind of what Matt thought would happen and nobody else believed Matt was right?
I mean, you know, the thing about interest rates is there's so many things that can move them, right? Back to the technical and the fundamental. Like, okay, something fundamentally took place and now we're on a different section of the field. I didn't think we were going to get back over 4% on the 10-year, and we went to 4.10, or I think we're at 4.06 right now. And I expect it to come down, right? But something needed to move it. There was a fundamental catalyst that took place, right? And we had several kind of just kind of hit us all at the same time. First of all, we had the JOLTS report came out, the job openings, labor turnover survey, right? And consensus was 7.7 million for, actually it was for the month of August. The JOLTS report's 1 month lag. So it was the month of August, right? And the prior month, which would have been the month of July, posted 7.7 million. It came in at 8.04 million. The last two times it has underperformed consensus. This time it outperformed consensus by 300,500, okay, by 340,000. It actually, so obviously the bond market spiked, and you can see basically our last show was September 27th, I think it was, that Friday. So when we had Monday, which was the 30th, and then October 1st, okay. So we closed September at 378, 379 on the 10-year. And here we are, you know, went to 410. And you can see as the data came in, the 10-year just took off. And what here's what's funny is that, as you can tell, this is an inflationary, the inflationistas are kind of out with this one, thinking there's going to be an issue with inflation again, because the shorter end of the curve moved, right? And those are usually a little more tied to inflation, right? So we've had the 10-year go from 378 to 410. Right? So we talk at what, 32 basis points. Okay. The 2 year has moved almost 40 basis points from about 360, high 350s to 397, almost four. Okay. So it's moved actually further than the 10 year. So it's caused a flattening of the curve, because we went from inverted to uninverted and we started to steepen. Now we're starting getting that flattening back a little bit, because they're thinking, you know, that shorter of the curve has come back a little bit. Right.
And it was, I think it was the last show that we talked about. It was just barely not inverted as of that show. Was that the last show? Or was that two shows ago that we were just barely not?
Yeah, it was like 10 basis points or something.
Right.
It wasn't super. And, you know, and that's the thing, is it's not going to go from being inverted to being, you know, uninverted by 2% over the course of one. It's a gradual shift that happens as economics. Here's the thing, is the longer end of the curve is kind of staying sticky, which is good. Okay, it's the shorter end of the curve that really needs to come down, because that's the inflation problem. The longer end of the curve, that's more of our economic strength. So we need to make sure there's a good balance between the two. We don't want everything to cool off so much that the longer end of the curve comes crashing through the 2 year. And that's what we normally get when we get an uninversion of the yield curve, right? Is when the 2 year comes crashing through the 10-year, and they're all coming down at a very rapid pace, right? Because the economy is cooling off so fast. This is not that. This is the inflation cycle, not a business cycle. It's an inflation cycle. So we see the 2 year came running through the 10-year, but the 10-year didn't really go from 4.5 down to 2. It's holding its own, because the longer term economic picture looks really, really good. The Atlanta Fed GDP tracker for Q3 was revised up. I think we talked about this last show. The very last day was that day. They revised Q3 up from 2.9 to 3.1 for Q3. Now, we're not going to get any actual GDP numbers until end of October. And then there's going to be two more, because GDP numbers are revised as more data comes in. And we'll get the final Q3 GDP number the very end of December of this year. However, the final GDP number for Q2 came in the end of September. And that came in at 3.0, right? The initial forecast back in July was 1.9. Again, good, solid, sustainable numbers. What I think this sort of this wiggle we're getting in on the short end of the curve has a lot to do with core CPI came in a little warm. Core CPI came in 0.3 month over month on 0.2 consensus. Headline came in at 0.2 on a 0.1 consensus. You know, and we had a warmer jobs number. Headline PPI came in today, or core producer price index came in today, right in line at 0.2. Headline PPI, a little cool actually, came in flat, zero on a 0.1 consensus. ISM services was a little hot, okay? So services, that's 72% of our economy, right? Services is the biggest part of our economy. and how the ISM services number works. I was kind of explaining this a little bit this morning, is the number is 50.0. At 50.1, that sector of the economy is expanding. At 49.9, that sector of the economy is contracting by that amount. Okay, so obviously, if it printed a 40, that's really, really bad. That's a tremendous contraction from the prior month. Versus if it posted a 60, that's a tremendous expansion of activity, of economic activity in that sector over the prior month. So consensus was 51.7, came in at 54.9. That's solid. Okay, and again, it's services. Again, manufacturing and production is important, but services is the big gorilla in the room as far as our economic strength is concerned. This is good. These are good, sustainable numbers. But there was some other issues that kind of I think are kind of holding rates in check a little bit right now. We had just recently, yesterday, we had initial claims come in. Initial claims came in at 258,000. Okay, consensus was 229,000. So if you look at a longer term chart of initial claims, it really needs to stay under 261,000. And you can, again, this is, I'm going to channel my inner Mark Newton here from Fundstrat, is you can actually take those labor reports and do technical analysis with them. You really can. If we get above 261 on that number and it really pops and goes up, that's going to be a problem. Okay. That's really going to be a problem.
Why is that?
Well, because that's letting you know that there is a longer term structural labor problem taking place. Initial claims, now it's gone through kind of a line in the sand that's held for a long, long time. And now we're having more initial claims than we should be having. Okay. Which I know that might not jive with GDP being strong, but that's just letting you know there's a lot of initial claims taking place right now. So maybe there's layoffs. Maybe that has to do with the hurricanes, which could, my guess is it came, you know, Hurricane Helene and now Hurricane Milton obviously are contributed to that. Let's hope that we, you know, that works itself out. So if you look at the jobs, though, the job openings, right, it posted 8,040,000. And it was a good month. However, it's been deteriorating. It's been deteriorating for a while. Okay. So again, back to, we want it to stay above 7 million, right? That's kind of a nice pre-pandemic floor that we want to center. And don't get me wrong, we still have a ways to go. But we want to make sure what's our politically correct word? Normalize. We don't want it to normalize too fast so it gets too normal too quick, right? However, if you look, the FOMC minutes that were posted yesterday or Wednesday, they were really concerned with the job market. They're really concerned with employment. Clearly, employment, labor is their primary concern over inflation. I understand, you know, in the press conferences and interviews, you know, their mandate, there's a balance now on their mandate with inflation and labor. But I think during the actual discussions, clearly they are more concerned about employment, which is good. So, okay, they're looking in the right direction and they're looking at outlook, where rates have gone, where CPI is posted and the JOLTS number and ISM services. I think we can throw a 50 basis point cut out the window for the November 7th meeting. We'll probably get a 25. We'll probably get a 25 and a 25 or a 25 and a zero.
A lot of investing can seem almost, I don't want to say paradoxical in a way, but in some ways it can. Interest rates going up on the 10-year right now is a bullish sign for the economy. And that sounds kind of backwards to what some people might think. A lot of times in fundamental, you know, business school or investing school, it's basically lower interest rates are good for the market, higher interest rates are bad for the market. And that's true to some extent, depending on what rates are and what's causing it and all these types of things. But it's such an art form, right? Because where we are right this second, interest rates going up is manifesting the Fed's feeling that the economy is strong enough that we don't have to cut interest rates further to keep the economy on solid ground, where interest rates going down kind of manifests that the economy itself isn't strong enough. So we have to now be more accommodative with monetary policy so that the economy can continue to flourish, where now rates going up is actually a sign that the economy is a big boy and can stand on its own 2 feet and without so much help from the Fed. Right now, there's almost a positive correlation between equity markets and the 10-year treasury rate. Rates go down, it's a sign that we're worried about the economy, which brings the S&P down with it. Rates go up, it's a sign that we're confident in the economy, brings S&P with it. Where if we were sitting at 9% rates on the 10-year, we probably wouldn't be experiencing that positive correlation between the S&P and the 10-year treasury rate, right? It would probably be a little bit the opposite, where rates going even higher is now a detriment to the S&P.
Right. So we're going to bring back good girlfriend, bad girlfriend.
Oh, no. Every time we do that, oh, my gosh. Editing becomes a nightmare when we start talking about girls on this show. It's so hard to clean that up.
So, okay, well, the dose makes the poison. How about that? Right.
Oh boy.
The dose makes the poison. And right now we are in a good news is good news, but bad news is bad news. Whereas before we were in bad news is good news. So we wanted bad news. We wanted, you know, lower jobs report, less job growth, you know, less price increases, all those other, we wanted cooling economic numbers so that we weren't worried about inflation just continuing to run amok. So we weren't worried about interest rates continuing to go up, which was bad for the equity markets. Okay. So good girlfriend, bad girlfriend. There's a balance there. At some point, if interest rates get too high, I mean, yes, right now GDP is strong. We posted good jobs numbers. Well, in the openings we did, the initial claims not so much, but I think the initial claims kind of an anomaly due to the hurricanes. CPI is good. It's not too hot. It's a little warmer than we would like, but it's not bad. But at some point, if it continues to do this and it continues to misbehave like a bad girlfriend does, right? Well, then rates are going to get too high. And well, now the good news is bad news. Okay. And all of a sudden, rates are too high. Now all of a sudden, your risk-free rates become more competitive with the equity side, and your bonds become more competitive with the equity side. And then we start to have multiple contraction. And that's not good for the stock market. Okay. So you can have, and then of course you get an economy that can just, again, start to run away from us and have, inflationary pressure start to build. So a healthy, sustainable environment is where good news is good news. Okay. And we want, you know, inflation to run 0.1, 0.2% a month. We want it to run about 2% a year. Okay. But we don't want it to go negative. Right. And we want GDP to run, you know, 3%, which is good. But if we want rates down a little bit because it's good for mortgage rates, that's specific to more the shorter end of the curve, right? That's more specific to inflation. I know mortgage rates are kind of correlated with the 10-year, but it's actually more to do with the shorter end of the curve, right? What these banks are being lent the money for, so what they can lend it out at. And that they're being lent the money for at the shorter end of the curve. So we really watch the 2-year. So if you look, mortgage rates have gone up. You know, they're up, what, 6.5% now? They've gone up, you know, almost 50 basis points. Well, they've gone up almost basis point for basis point with what the 2-year did, almost 40 basis points, right? And that's because, again, the banks are lent the money at the SOFR rate of 5%, and they have to lend it out. So they're buying the money at 5, and they're lending it out at 6.5 now. That's not really good for your smaller regional banks, which is your small caps. That's 40% of the small cap index is your smaller regional banks. So, again, back when we talked about this a show ago, is when they were getting money for 25 basis points, right? When rates were flat, they were lending it out at, you know, 3%, 3.5%, massive spread, you know, 3.25% on their spreads. Now that spread's at, you know, 150, right, on what they're lending at. So if you look at 10-year at 4%, it's 4% right now with a 6.5% 30-year mortgage, we have a 2.5% spread from 10-year to mortgage rates. Okay. That number should be 1.6, 1.7%. That's a healthy number. So there's still a lot of room to run on the short end of the curve coming down as inflation comes down. But we want inflation to come down. And that gets us into sort of, you know, what's going to happen in the next 3 to 4 weeks of the election and how that's going to react. In fact, David Zervos came on today on CNBC, really sharp guy. And he said today what we've been saying for quite a while, that if Trump wins, there's going to be, you know, less regulation, lower taxes. And we're going to have, the market's going to do a little bit better, but we're going to have stickier rates in the long end, right? It's okay. If Harris gets in, you know, the market will be okay. We'll probably do as good, but we'll have a little bit lower rates, okay? So because it'll be, you know, we'll have the same kind of regulatory regime that we have now. I think the bond market is right now sort of living in purgatory until they kind of know who's going to win. Again, we always talk about don't let politics infect your investment decision making, and that's true. We don't want your personal political beliefs to say, like, for instance, oh, Harris gets in, I'm coming out of the market because she'll tank the economy. Or if Trump gets in, I'm coming out of the market because he'll go to war with China. Okay. That's infecting your investment decision making. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, okay, the two different administrations will have a different impact on corporate America and thus the bond market. Okay. So, and there will be less regulation and less taxes under Trump, but you're also likely going to have more productivity. So that's going to be good. So you're going to have more productivity, we think, more supply. I think we'll be able to put a lid on inflation because we'll have a good supply, right? So we should have pretty good numbers on the shorter end of the curve under a Republican administration. Okay. And we should have, with less regulation and lower taxes, we should have stickier numbers on the kind of that 10, 20 year end of the curve, right? Because economic growth. So, you know, I think that's what they're kind of looking at right now versus if Harris gets in, we might, you know, when we have more regulation and more sort of employee type of labor rights, I guess, not rights, but involvement in corporate America, you tend to get, and I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, you tend to get a little bit lower productivity per dollar, right? So the dollars that you spend get you less productivity under those types, and you see that a lot with the social, with more of the left or leaning socialist countries in Europe, right? To get more production out of those people, you have to pay them a lot more money. So thus you get inflationary pressures. So under Trump, it's going to be a little bit different. We'll probably have more productivity with less dollars being spent, and, you know, which will help the short end of the curve. And I think that's just kind of what the bond market's waiting on. So I think bond market's kind of in a purgatory. And I think there was this little sort of, we had some data points that hit that leaned hot, but there was some other stuff that kind of leaned cool, right? PPI came out today. Again, headline was cool. Initial claims came in this week, well above consensus. But again, I think we can attribute that to the hurricane. So we've got a lot of stuff coming in. We have earnings season starting in earnest next week, right? Earnings last quarter came in at $59.98 for last quarter. Consensus for this quarter right now is at $60.32 for Q3. The quarter we just had is for $60.32. The current quarter we're in, Q4, consensus is for $63.13. So, you know, we're talking about a 5% gain from Q4 into Q3.
With this movement since the last show, I know on the last show we talked about this little mini rotation where consumer staples and some of the names you might not thought of to lead the market in a rally, right? Has that rotation continued, or has tech and the more traditionally cyclical sectors of the economy started to rotate into the leadership role a little bit?
No, we've definitely seen tech come back. We've seen banks come back quite a bit. We've seen a really good, just across the board, wide breadth, a lot of strong breadth, actually. So it's been pretty robust. I mean, it's pretty much all the sectors are really humming. We actually, you know, have a high in the S&P today and a high in the Dow. You know, your Dow is kind of your more value oriented stuff. You're more your industrial type stuff. So we're seeing this really across the board, you know, industrials and financials. Healthcare is kind of lagging, still kind of lagging. It's starting to come up, starting to come around, but it's been, you know, tech and communication services have done really, but specifically tech. But right now the market, if I'm being honest, it's a little too hot to handle for me. So we're not putting any money to work right now. Any new money to work, I take that back. So new money coming in, we're not putting to work. I looked at the AAII, the American Association of Individual Investors, bull bear survey this morning. It's done. It comes out Thursday. I take a look at it every Friday. And it's just barely below the threshold of being what we consider officially froth, right? So bears are 30% lower than bulls right now. So we're at 20.6 and 49. Okay, so when the bears get under 20%, that's frothy. Okay, and you know that's when they say, well, if the bears go into hibernation, that's a problem because there's no one left to sell. Okay, everyone's buying now, and that can go on for a while. Don't get me wrong, it can go on for a while, but it can create a big fat garage door spring that whips you right back into place in a real hurry, right? And usually, like I said, you want sort of that bull-bear relationship to be less, you know, kind of that 10 to 15% is nice and healthy. You don't like it over 30, and it's right now bulls are 49, and Bears are 20.6. So much more of this, and my, and this is not inclusive of today's market. So, and we know today is a good day. So if we,
we're recording October 11th, about 1:30 on the East Coast here, we're at 58.06, about 0.5%. I believe this is a new all-time high. Pretty sure. And I'll point out here, I mean, to new listeners who haven't followed us, you know, longer term here, I can remember, and I don't have exact dates, or it'd be a lot cooler if I did, but I can remember this is probably the third or fourth time we've had some type of a conversation along these lines. And I can recall one very specifically, September 13th, when we came back from a little bit of a break, we had basically a V in the S&P chart since we had last spoken. It'd gone straight down, then come straight back up. And I specifically remember on that show you saying that you thought the market was going to kind of consolidate and rally a little bit heading into the end of the month, into the end of the quarter. And that's exactly what happened. The last time you said that you weren't really putting capital to work, this is the one I wish I had the exact date on, but I want to say it was like March, April, when you kind of said, hey, we're not bearish on the market, but we're just not putting any money to work. That led into like a 6-7% decline from there. So we aren't really, well, I'm not here to predict what's going on in the market. And I don't think Matt pretends to be here to claim that he can predict what's going to happen in the market week by week. But whenever you say something, it does seem to work out, which works out pretty cool for the show.
I mean, the data is what the data is, right? And I remember that it was early March, and into March, I said, I think we're going to hold for a while here. I think actually we started that in February, you know, and we kind of started holding that. And once we saw we would get a pullback, and I put money back to work. It was April 19th, April 20th, whatever that was, 49. I remember putting the money to work specifically at 49.65 on the S&P. Listen, trust me, it's much better to be lucky than good. And
oh, yeah.
I got.
No, I'm not claiming
you haven't hit it that day.
I'm just claiming that you have. I'm just claiming you're lucky. I mean,
I'm not claiming you're lucky. Right. No, I agree. Well, I'm definitely. But I would like to see back to normalization, right? I would like to see these numbers, these frothy kind of numbers that we look at, they need to normalize a little bit before I would put any new money to work, right? I'm not trying to day trade. And I think there's going to be some consolidation happens next week. And then, you know, we have earnings season and an election coming up.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be ample opportunity to buy the dips in the next, over the course of the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I was thinking, so I'm, as you know, I'm in North Carolina, so the flooding and the devastation from Helene were literally like my backyard. I mean, I grew up about an hour from some of the mountain communities and about 3 hours from Asheville. So, I mean, it's been something that's been in the spotlight around here. And then you've got Milton that has hit Florida, which is just, I mean, Florida was hit every bit as much as North Carolina was without the flood. I mean, we just weren't prepared. The mountains weren't prepared for it, but Florida took a bigger punch, but we just were less prepared for it. And then Florida gets Milton right on the back end of that. And then you start seeing reports about the government controlling the weather, and you've got, we're not going there. I'm not trying to go there, you know, but I'm looking at this and thinking, you know what? The last time that I felt like Armageddon was upon us and the world couldn't possibly get any crazier was 2020. That was the last election year. It's like when 2028 gets here, I'm out. I'm leaving the country. I'm unplugging. I'm not listening to anything in the next election year, because people get crazier than you can imagine, it seems, in election years, and it's just getting worse and worse. And as we get closer, yeah, you're probably right. There'll probably be a lot of opportunities to buy the dip. Where is it dipping from? I don't know. But yeah, it'll be an interesting month we got ahead of us here.
Well, I mean, it looks like there's been a material change in likelihood of who's going to win. And it appears from what we're seeing here, and based on how each performs, the actual performance against polling data, right? And that's what I look at. What's that differential? And
what do you mean by that? That's an actual performance versus polling data.
So if you look at where, for instance, where Trump performs, he actually outperforms his polls by about like 4-6%.
Okay.
If you look at Harris, she kind of underperforms her polls by about 3%. Okay. Based on, and the data is from when she was running for the Democratic nominee back in 2020. You look at that and you see where the polls are razor thin. But then if you add that performance to polling differential, it's not all that tight. It's about a 9% difference. Now, guess what the real Clear Politics odds average is today?
I was actually going to ask that because that's you're right on top of that usually. What were we at right this
9.2 for Trump.
That's great.
So it's 9.2 for Trump. And it, listen, it is what it is. So, I mean, yeah. On September 27th, our last show, Harris actually was 2.6% ahead in the real Clear Politics betting average. Trump is now ahead by 9.2%. Now,
that's a 13 point swing in 2 weeks.
Do you know what it was on October 11th of 2020 with Biden and Trump?
What?
Biden was ahead 66.3 to 33.3.
Wow.
And Trump almost won by 40 something thousand votes across a few states.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was in 2016 when he actually did win at this time against Clinton? She was predicted to win 86% to 14%.
On October 11th, they're at the same point. Wow.
So
yeah, 2016 was a huge surprise. I mean, I think 2016
it was, and I think that data is a little bit cloudy to use. You know what I mean? But I think you can use the data from 2020. And if you look at how the actual, I mean, there was a 33% differential in odds then. And you can just see that he tends to outperform every single time. It's so easy. Oh, you know, whatever you want to say. But when you're in that booth and you're by yourself, you know, you vote how you vote. Okay, good, bad, or otherwise, you just vote how you vote. So, you know, we're tending to see this a little bit. And here's the other thing. You and I have talked about this before. Maybe those kind of rates on that longer, they're over four. They really haven't moved all, I mean, they've come down, but they've come back up. Back to David Zervos this morning. Maybe the bond market is getting ahead of this thing. You and I have had this discussion, right? Maybe the bond market.
Well, the bond market tends to, I think we've had this discussion before, that the bond market tends to be maybe a little bit more intelligent than the equity markets. Is that a fair generalization of what we've said before? I mean, you can, the equity market seems to be almost like a rebellious teenager. It doesn't really know what it wants to do. The bond market seems to be a little bit more sophisticated, a little less volatile, a little bit more refined. I don't know what the word is, but I know there's a reason that a lot of intelligent equity specialists or focused investors like yourself, I would put you in that category, look to the bond market as a key metric in evaluating your thesis on the equity markets and where you think it's going. And there's a reason for that. I don't know how many bond market experts look at the equity markets or how hard bond market or bond managers look at the equity markets for guidance, but I know a lot of equity managers look at the bond market for guidance and putting together their data points.
Absolutely. And I can guarantee you there's no fixed income managers out there going, I wonder what the equity guys are doing today. They don't care. here's the reason why. Because the market, although it makes its decisions as a whole, there is some questionable decision making that happens from a certain cohort of investors. I mean, you're not going to, what's that, the Hello Kitty guy or the Angry Cat guy from GameStop guy, whatever.
I try really hard not to.
Yeah, you're not going to see, you're not going to see him post something on Reddit about buying the, you know, investment grade corporate bond of Home Depot or, hey, let's all jump into the 5-year treasury notes. No, yeah. It's not going to happen. You know, that's not what they do. So you have this group of folks who live in the equity markets who do not exist in the bond markets. Okay. There is no day trader types in the bond markets. There's no people with their phones running around on Robinhood saying, "Hey, I want to get into the, you know, the 10-year treasury note today. I want to buy a Tennessee Valley Authority bond today." That doesn't happen. You tend to see the bond side is just a much more sober group of people because they look at long-term, you know, they look at where the dollar is, where, you know, currencies, they look at economic growth or strength and deteriorating or growing, and what's that long-term direction looks like? What's the current cost of money? Will the cost of money in 6 months be higher or lower? Why will it be that way? And they make those decisions based on all of those factors. And then when they buy, they don't buy, you know, $200 worth of stuff. They buy $200 million worth of positions, or $1 billion worth of positions. So that's why you see, you know, a lot more usable data from the fixed income side.
Real quick, we're running close on time here, but real quick, earnings season coming up here. When do we kick off? What you watching for?
Well, actually, one thing did come in already. Of course, we're always going to look at tech, NVIDIA, NVIDIA last quarter posted 68 cents a share. This quarter consensus is 74 cents a share. Next quarter, which is the quarter we're actually in right now, they're supposed to make 81 cents a share. So my guess is NVIDIA will probably post their Q4 number in Q3, 81 cents a share. And my guess is the expectations are already built into that price. But JP Morgan, it looks like they actually missed their earnings, but missed by less than consensus estimates. Okay. Which says, you know, things are actually, the market's humming at a pretty good clip. So, or the economy's humming at a pretty good clip.
They missed backlog, their estimate, or they missed the street estimate?
No, they missed their profit. Their profit was down from a year ago.
Okay.
Earnings were down from a year ago, but it was less than analysts had expected.
Okay.
So they outperformed their number. Okay.
Yeah, for the
so numbers. They actually, gotcha. I'm sorry, they beat consensus, but they were still down from a year ago. So I'm
gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, 9 times out of 10, when you look at earnings, from my experience, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, my experience is stock performance following the earnings announcement is going to be much more correlated to what the number was versus consensus estimates than it's going to be what it was versus last quarter, last year, whatever.
Correct.
Because usually there's going to be cycles and all that analysts are already anticipating and baking into their numbers. The question is going to be, it might be confusing if you're brand new to investing to see a company lose 20% year over year and the stock rally 25% off of that. But if the estimate was for them to lose 50% year over year, then that's exactly what would happen. It's more about what did they do versus expectations.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're not trying to predict the past. I mean, we know what it was a year ago, right? So
right.
We're not comparing ourselves to a year ago. We're not comparing the earnings to a year ago. We're obviously comparing what we think it's going to be, right? And then, because yeah. What's priced in today is the expectation of what those earnings are going to be, right?
Right.
So they beat those estimates, which is good. BlackRock, they just announced their assets have grown to $11.5 trillion. So there's plenty of good news out there on the financial front. We want a good financial sector. That's a very important part of the economy. If we start to see that really suffer, that's kind of a, I won't say a canary in a coal mine, but it's certainly a barometer that we want to use. Say, hey, okay, you know, if banks are tightening up, if earnings aren't good, they're gonna tighten up their lending, they're gonna have restrictive covenants in their lending, and that's gonna sort of put a damper on everything. And I don't see that taking place, being that obviously the Fed is aware, of course, what we talked about already, the employment and labor normalizing, and they don't want it to normalize too much. Thus, they're going to make sure that banks are lending, and they're going to make rates more competitive so they can lend even more.
Well, anytime you want to know how important is the financial services sector to the overall economy, I mean, 1929, 2008 would like a word, I think, on those. I mean, it may not be the only thing that it's not the be all and end all, and certainly tech is very, very important right now. But even tech doesn't run without the financial sector, right? Everybody relies on lending and earning interest and capital market. You take away capital markets, you don't have businesses. And a lot of businesses go away without capital markets in some way. We were just rely on that so much. And both times that we have come to the edge of the cliff of Armageddon in our economy in the United States in the last 150 years has come from a financial crisis.
The business cycle is the credit cycle, period.
Right.
Full stop. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So we have to have, you know, what caused the Great Depression was a lack of access to credit.
Yeah.
And the Federal Reserve was created so that doesn't happen again. Okay. So, you know, having an umpire, if you will, or somebody who can work the faucet of capital availability and, you know, more capital, less capital to the economy is a good thing, you know, because obviously, it's never going to take out the entire volatility of the economy, but it can certainly put a shock absorber in it, which it has done, right? And frankly, yeah. The more every day, more economic data points fold into these models, more data points are able to be analyzed, and they can generate better decision making with more sample sets. It's very simple.
Yeah.
The more sample sets you have, the more clear the data becomes. Right. So, you know, you look at what the Federal Reserve did through this, not business or credit cycle. They had to work through an inflation cycle. And I got to tell you, I mean, it was masterful. Now, don't get me wrong. They should have cut in July, like we said. Had they done what I said, well, everything would be fine. right?
They obviously don't listen to the Intelligent Investment presented by ARPG.
No, don't know. They absolutely whiffed it in 2021 with their whole transitory inflation. I get that. So they you know, it's not like they're without fault here. However, as far as when it did get here and they started having to manage through the process and raise rates at a rate, at a certain rate of speed, right? Like how fast we're going to raise rates, how fast we're going to bring them down. So far, I mean, yeah, we got a 26-27% pullback in the S&P 500 from basically January 4th of 2022 to October. Actually, today is the day. It is the 2-year anniversary of the bull market today to October 11th of 2022, you know, just about 10 months or so, 9.5 months to that drop about 26-27%. And then it came right back pretty quick. So they knew that, I think, for in large part, the Federal Reserve knew there was going to be financial market volatility as they worked through this. But what they didn't want it to cause is labor market volatility, right? Or serious economic volatility where we all of a sudden, you know, you go to buy your groceries and, you know, a carton of eggs, although they did spike a little bit, you know, they're not $20. I think they've done a good job, honestly, of managing this. And I think, you know, Jay Powell will probably go down as one of the best, if not the best Fed chairman there ever was, because his ability to communicate to the markets and to the public and people that really understand what he's trying to say, I think is as good as I've ever seen. You know, he's the right amount of intellectual with the right amount of wit, okay, and the ability to communicate to all sectors of the public, right, in a very effective way. So, you know, I think they've done a good job, and I think he's done a great job.
Well, as always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for entertainment and education purposes only. Matt and I, nor ARPG, know anything about your financial situation. We are not here to tell you what to do with your money or give you any investment or financial advice. However, and I'm going to get it right this time, I'm looking at it on the screen right there. If you would like to contact Matt and his team at ARPG, you may do so by giving them a call at 702-655-8300. Finally got it right this time.
You got it. Knocked it out of the park.
Or check them out at intelligentinvestment.com. Matt also does a great newsletter that you can subscribe to. Had a chance to enjoy that this morning before the show. Matt, appreciate your insights as always. Always have an awesome time doing this with you and watching it play out. In hindsight, it's always pretty entertaining as well. But thanks for your time, man. See you in a couple of weeks. Rock on.
Going to be a good couple of weeks. Talk to you soon. Thank you.